Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Emma, Roz and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It's Wednesday, November 6th, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show with Bette De Silva at 7pm, the team news is in ahead of Ireland's Friday night encounter with New Zealand. We'll dissect that with Keane Tracy and Elliot Smith. In soccer, John Fallon is in studio with news, reviews and previews. Plus, we'll hear from Stephen Bradley ahead of Shamrock Rovers' return to European action tomorrow. And in Gaelic games, there's one reported return of Michael Murphy to the Donegal panel for 2025. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200 or on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, welcome along. John Fallon is with me in studio. A couple of early games in the Champions League. 40 minutes played in the Club Brugge Aston Villa game. Nil all there, and Shakhtar Donetsk and Young Boys also nil all. 17 minutes played there. A few interesting ties to get stuck into in just a little while. We'll also reflect on last night's big games as well. But we're going to go straight to the League of Ireland. A little bit of news today. I guess the big story is that Ciarán Kilduff has been appointed as the new manager of Dundalk. John Fallon, what's your reaction to this news?
Yeah, no real surprise, Marie. Ciarán had been tipped to return to his former club. When John Daly indicated that he was stepping away, Ciarán was still with Athlone Town's women team. They won the league. They got beaten in the cup final, as you know. He resigned that night, so he did become available. John Temple said at that stage he hadn't spoken to Ciarán Kilduff, so I think once they chatted and the terms were amenable, it was going to happen. So Ciarán is back there. But I suppose there still is a cloud of uncertainty around that club, particularly with their finances.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, really, because it's an opportunity for Ciarán Kilduff, but it's also got a lot of potential pitfalls. We're not sure when he starts, if he'll be able to sign players, if he'll have the money to sign players, John. It's that time of year when managers are getting their business done. It'll be difficult to attract players when there's so much uncertainty around it. Is it a big risk for him, do you think? Because we know it's so fickle.
Yeah, it is. Like, a lot of League of Ireland jobs would be, but this one seems particularly so, given the volatility around the place. Like, we don't know at this stage whether the club or the company are going to have to enter what's known as a SCAR process, which is a different form of examinership. And with that, will likely become a points deduction, which means they will be in a minus tally even before they kick off life in the first division for the first time in 17 years. So that wasn't really discounted today from the owner, John Temple. So Ciarán, say he's probably on the back foot a bit now, because a lot of the business is already done. You're going out trying to entice players on a very limited budget. But what you would have to say is he was in sort of similar circumstances in that loan, and that they wouldn't have been one of the more decorated clubs or had the history that Piemont or Shelburne had, or even Wexford. And he went in there, he galvanised that team, he certainly got players playing above their station, and he got them their first ever league title. So he does have history of creating, you know, more than the sum of the parts within a team.
Yeah, definitely. I think when it came to that loan, he got them to play beyond themselves in ways like the expectation wasn't as high, and then they achieved brilliant things under him in such a short period of time. But it's very different in Dundalk, John, than going to that loan town where you have small crowds. You know, you're not dealing with big player wages, contracts. There isn't as much competition. There's lots of people who just like playing for their home club. It's such a different game in terms of the eyeballs, the pressure, the expectation, the ruthlessness of it. Like, we rarely, a couple of times this season we might have seen some women's our managers depart unexpectedly, but like, it happens so often in men's football. It's just a different game.
It is a different game, a different sector, and ordinarily that would be the case. But when you look at the turmoil Dundalk have gone through, their fans are realistic to know that they're just glad to have a club participating in the league at this stage. So I think it's going to be very much a back to basics approach. The sense I get is they're going to revert to part time. Which is, it's actually going the other way in the first division. Some of them have moved towards sort of a more of a hybrid model. With that, they're not going to be competing, you know, in the big spender category. I don't even think promotion is really that important for Dundalk, considering the turmoil, as I said, that's gone on. I think they just need to be stable. Like, the crowds weren't really great there that the season. They probably averaged around 2,200. First division, what are you going to get? Maybe 1,500. So if you look at the income model and you match it up against their outlay, it's going to be a very limited budget. And it's even with the owner, John Temple, it was very much a short-term arrangement to get to the end of the season. And he's talking about bringing in extra investors. And if that was to happen, it would certainly improve the landscape. But I think the fans now at this stage will just be happy to have a team participating.
Patient football fans, do they exist?
Well, they were traumatised really at the end of the year. Fair. Whatever about finishing bottom of the table, but the players not getting paid on time and the club's existence come within a few hours of being jeopardised, I think has really taught them that they've really come out of survival mode and it's just into consolidation now.
Yeah, a bit more movement. Wexford FC manager James Keddie announced that he's departing his role. Had a very good season. They qualified for the First Division playoffs and the FA Cup semi-finals as well. And I saw them that day against Drogheda and they were really impressive. Could have actually got the win there. Yeah. He hasn't said why he's leaving the role. Is it just a case that it's a bit of a managerial merry-go-round, John?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if James ends up at a different club because I was quite surprised at this. You look at the statement, he doesn't actually say anything directly about the hierarchy of the club. And I think from their side, they said it was just the timing, you know, to go their separate ways. But as you mentioned there in the summary, they got to the playoffs in the semi-final of the FA Cup. We were both up there in Drogheda and they were very unlucky not to win. They were ahead and they lost 3-2. So there seems to be a foundation there for James to work on. And it's been a couple of weeks since the league finished. So I'm surprised by it. As you say, unless he has something lined up, I haven't heard. Unless they have someone lined up, conversely as well. Because I thought in this era of League of Ireland, which can be very myopic, I think they had a chance to build on something there.
Just from obviously following the season, it does feel like maybe the League of Ireland isn't as stable as we would have thought at the start of the season, probably because of the issues with Dundalk. Is it an attractive prospect to be a manager in the First Division?
I suppose it depends what club it is, because the budgets and the stability varies depending on where you're going. Like we do have Bray Wanderers in the final now against Drogheda, which is Saturday week.
Switch to Tala.
I'd always heard it was going to be Tala. I don't know why it was named Richmond in the first place, but I think you'll get an idea against Drogheda, you know, what the gulf is there. You know, we perceive that there will be. It is a league that's coaches really have started in the main, like Kieran Kilduff, have to start their men's career in.
It could end so quickly there as well, though.
Yeah, well, that's just the nature of management. But you know, Stephen Kenny started with Longford Town. You know, you have to start somewhere, and it's the problem with the First Division is, as well as the Premier has done with crowds and so on, the First Division hasn't really progressed and it hasn't really caught up in any way, and that's a fear, particularly as here the FAI talking about introducing the third tier. I think that's far too premature. They have to really concentrate on building the product in the First Division that's going on.
Why do you think it hasn't closed the gap a little bit?
I just don't think certainly from a media perspective it doesn't get the profile as we know. I think if there was more, again it goes back to investment, obviously the facilities. Wexford got a grant of $2 million for a new ground, but that's years away because they're going to stay in Ferry-Carrig until the M11 project is proceeded with. I just think, like, if you had the likes of marketing officers or club promotions officers out there just selling the clubs in the local communities, because if you look, there's quite a regional spread in the First Division, you know, from Finn Harps down to Wexford. You've got Treaty and Limerick, you've got Kerry, obviously the newest club. And they're all going small, gradual ways, but you would like it to be accelerating at this stage, that it would be in some way correlating with the Premier Division. Okay. But it's not. So I think, again, in answer to your question, more money, more staff around the place, spreading the gospel.
Age old story, really, isn't it?
It is.
You mentioned Wexford getting the grant to develop new grounds. It was quite a good week, really, wasn't it, when you think about the money that was dished out. You've been around a bit longer than I have. Is it unprecedented?
It is in terms of quantity. Like daily amount, you know, getting 25 million, and Sligo I think got 17, I think it was, and Wexford the 2 million. So you're in around, and Shamrock Rovers got 650 for Tallaght Stadium for floodlights upgrade. So I think it's around 43 million. The concern you always have with these things, Marie, is if you look at the last round, which was in 2020, those two projects that got the funding were Finn Harps and the Glanmire project, neither of which have proceeded. Glanmire got shelled by the FEI, which is a story in itself. Finn Harps, the issue there isn't with state support. Ironically, it's down to the matching funding, which is you have to come up with 30% of your own means outside of core funding. And they're down to doing different schemes to get that. So that's that new stadium project must be going on 20 years and it still hasn't progressed. There is a shell there, I think, but they've looked at different designs. So that's the fear you would have with, it's always the concern you'd have with these announcements. But Daly Mount, I think there's a willingness there, given that John Delaney put it in as one of the Euro 2020 legacy projects, and here we are 4 years later, and it's going to be probably 2026 by the time it starts. But it seems that that's a joint venture between Dublin City Council and the government. That's where all the money's coming from. The Sligo Master Plan is more elaborate and there's different phases to it, so hopefully these are the jump starts that are required to get these things moving, because as you know, we're well behind in infrastructure.
Is there a use it or lose it clause with these funds?
Yeah, they've finally woken up and done that, because a lot of stuff doesn't, the grants don't get drawn down. So yeah, if that's gonna incentivize people to get a move on, it will. I think Sligo are in good shape. The Daly Mount is totally publicly funded. The one at Wexford is a new stadium which is nearer the town, and looking at Tony Doyle's plans, it's a gradual. They're looking at a modular build, so they'll probably do a couple of, I think it's for an all weather pitch and a pavilion before they even get into stands. So that's going to be that's going to be a long haul one.
Okay, well, you mentioned Tallaght Stadium, which brings us on to Shamrock Rovers. They are in action tomorrow as the European journey continues. They are going to be facing the New Saints. There was a press conference earlier today, and our own Tony O'Donoghue spoke to the Shamrock Rovers manager, Stephen Bradley.
Can you bring me up to date, first of all, on any injury concerns you might have? Rory Gaffney was someone you were hoping might come back before the end of the season. That's not the case, I believe.
No, Rory, to be fair, has been ringing me non-stop the last couple of weeks and asking could he try and make a push to be involved. He's been running recently, but the plan with Rory has always been for quite some time to get him ready for next year pre-season, and that still remains the plan. Danny won't make tomorrow. Danny will be looking at probably getting minutes against HJK in a friendly here. Sean Kavanagh picked up a knock, and we need to check on Sean Hoare. Sean Hoare will be a late check, but everyone else is okay.
Was it difficult to lift the guys? You did your side of the bargain, won the game last Friday, but ultimately lost the league.
No, not really. I think, like I said a million times now, if we're being honest, we haven't been good enough. So I think it's very easy to understand why we haven't have a league winner's medal in our hand come the end of the season. And what also what helps is when you've been successful over a period of time, you understand not to get too high or too low, and just to reflect and move on very quickly. And this group have been brilliant at that throughout the years, and that definitely doesn't change just because we've lost the league this year.
Financially at least, and maybe even in terms of prestige, is this more important than an FAI Cup final or even winning the league?
Is this more important than the FAI Cup? I don't think there's any question about that for us. Like, you know, when you look at the start of the year, it's league, Europe and Cup in that order, like, you know. So I think we obviously haven't won the league, and we're doing well in Europe. So this is a really big game for us tomorrow.
In terms of the opposition, you've been to see them. How would you describe their style of play?
They have a really clear identity. You can see they're well coached. Really clear identity in how they play. Possession based team with lots of really good technical players in that. Some really good movements, clever movements in and out of possession. They also have a lot of experience within the team that have been around the leagues in England, and you can see that in how they play. So they have a really nice blend about them. Yeah, so we're under no illusions that tomorrow's a difficult game against a good team.
Do you feel a win tomorrow will get you playing football, competitive football, into next season, next year?
Well, that's been the aim from the very start, and we put ourselves in a position to try and do that tomorrow night. time will tell if we can, but the aim tomorrow night is to try and win the game, and if you do that, obviously you have games left which you want to try and win some of them as well. But if we win tomorrow night, I'd imagine it gives us a really, really good chance of playing football, European football, after Christmas.
Stephen Bradley speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. So Shamrock Rovers, it sounds like they're going to have a bit of a tougher test than they did against Larne when they take on TNS tomorrow. Is that fair enough, John?
Yeah, I don't think you'll be seeing a 6-1 tomorrow night. Now, albeit Rovers were at their brilliant best that night up in Windsor Park a couple of weeks ago. The Welsh champions for the last 3 years, they've come into this game having beaten Astana, a Kazakhstan team. They won 2-0. So these will be up a level. But Rovers are in a great position already. They're only two games into a six-game campaign and they're 4 points. So as Tony asked there, if they were to get seven, it all but guarantees at least a playoff. So the expectation would be victory, but a point wouldn't be disastrous either. But we do have to bear in mind the harder games, and the last three are Rapid Vienna and Chelsea, obviously on the 19th of December.
Of course, yeah. So now's the time to get the points.
Yeah, if you get them done early, yeah, it gives you that bedrock to try and get there automatically. Yeah. Like Stephen Bradley did say that up in Windsor after the game. Why not? If you get seven, why not just aim for 10? But just the way the fixtures have fallen, you're playing the Northern Ireland champions, you're playing the Welsh champions. They got a point in the first game against Apoella, late equaliser. That gave them a good springboard to move on. So these, if you were to look at the draw when it was made, these between Larne and TNS, that's where you would look most likely to get the two wins out of the six.
Okay, so look, it's all positive at the moment anyway. We'll see how it progresses over the next few weeks. Lots of Champions League going on. We'll get to that in just a minute. Just the Ireland squad tomorrow, because we'll be talking about Liverpool and Creven Kelleher is now on a run of games. We also saw Michael Obafemi scoring for Plymouth yesterday. So positivity around the Ireland squad announcement potentially tomorrow, John?
Yeah, when you look at Michael Obafemi scoring, but they are missing, you know, four key players like Robbie Brady, who was instrumental in the win.
He was.
In Finland, an assist and a goal. He's gone with ankle ligaments. Chidoz Yogbene has a serious Achilles problem. Jack Taylor, who came on in Greece and nearly got, you know, an equaliser on his debut, he's got a hamstring, and so does Will Smallbone, who missed the last camp. So that's the bad news. I suppose on the other side, Seamus Coleman should be back. I know he hasn't played really for Everton since he's recovered, but his influence around the camp is important, because we go into these last two games of the Nations League campaign, Finland at home, where defeat you doesn't bear thinking about really, because then you're looking at bottom of that group and relegation then into League C. Whereas if we draw, and certainly if we win, we'd be looking at third place and a better chance in the playoff. Finland's the first game, which is Thursday week the 14th, and then we go to England, Wembley Stadium, for the final game on the Sunday on the 17th. So you'd like to go to Wembley, maybe with the shackles off, having got a result against Finland. But we do have a history of making things difficult for ourselves.
We absolutely do. Evan Ferguson, though, like having him back scoring again is good.
Starting and scoring, yeah. It's been a patient game with him. Like he was two cameos in the first window. He's starting the last window, and he should be leading the line this time. It's sort of who plays around him then is the question. Adamida, a bit of an injury at the weekend, but seems to be okay. And then Obafemi, who hasn't really featured under Heimer Hellgrimsson, is pushing to get into the squad, and I'd be surprised if he's not in the squad when it's named at lunchtime tomorrow, because he gives you a different dimension. He's explosive pace and the likes of that. So he's probably, when you look at his competitors, maybe Callum Robertson, you have to say Obafemi is probably a better option for these two games.
Yeah, and he's scoring as well, which always helps.
Yeah.
I mentioned that Creven Kelleher is getting a run of games, which is brilliant, because we like to have our goalkeepers playing regular football, if at all possible. It's not always the case, but things are going well, even if you're just to take in last night playing Bayer Leverkusen. The expectation was it would probably be a little bit of a tougher test. They won 4-0, so a clean sheet for Kelleher, but a good performance for Liverpool, and it's just all still trending in the right direction, John.
yeah, under Ernie Slot, he only lost one game, won the rest of them. So it's been a very impressive start to him. And just on Irish goalkeepers, lest we not forget, Mark Travers started against Man City the weekend when Bournemouth won. So,
and he's playing really well, isn't he?
He is, he is. And Gavin Bazunu is obviously injured, but you know, we've an embarrassment in that area. But from a grievance perspective, I think it's enjoy it while we can, because as we know, when Alisson does come back, he's going to be going back into that spot, and it does then bring things into debate around January as to when he goes, or will the right offer be there from the go, because it certainly seems he's gone past the stage of sitting on the bench.
While we're on the topic of management and it being so fickle, when you think that Ruben Amorim went and took on Manchester City as still the manager of Sporting last night and managed a 4-1 victory over what we all perceive anyway as the best team in the Premier League, and they have been definitely for the last number of years, he makes it look quite easy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He comes across, and I say that as a Man United fan, he comes across as someone who's very humble. I think he did state afterwards that 4-1 was probably not a fair reflection of the game, and when you consider that they won the match 4-1 with 23% possession, they'd one corner, Man City had 11 corners. Like, as United fans will take that out now at this stage. So I don't know, is this his going to be his last victory over Manchester City for a long time? I hope.
Where's
not.
Your faith?
I know. Yeah. Well, when you're worn down as a Man United fan for the last decade, since the 2013 league win, that's what happens. Just as you think you're coming out of the slump, like winning the FA Cup last May, you just get back to reality. And I think he's got a big body of work ahead of him. Old Trafford.
Is there any cause for concern if people are Manchester City fans now, just given that they're in a little bit of a slump at the moment? We know they don't usually move into fifth gear till after Christmas, but still, to see them have consecutive games, to lose consecutive games, isn't the norm.
Yeah, I think it's only the second time they've lost three games in a row in three different competitions, when you include the League Cup game against Spurs last week. So it's not quite a crisis point, but it's clear what the problem is. They're missing Rodri.
Yeah.
Like, they were leading Arsenal when he went off injured. They drew 2-2 that game, and since then they look leaky at the back, and they've seemed to be now in the habit of going behind the matches. You know, which wasn't like them. So against Fulham, I think it was Newcastle and Wolves, they went behind, and it happened again at Bournemouth the weekend, but this time they just couldn't come back. Last night in Lisbon, had Haaland scored the penalty, he would have made it 3-2. It could have been a different game. It doesn't, it clatters off the crossbar and comes out. But the Rodri deficit is really hurting them, alloyed to the fact that the defence looks very creaky. And then Haaland, is he already feeling the pressure? You know, I know he didn't go to the Euros and he thought he would have been fresh, but what is their alternative for an out-and-out striker for City? So, listen, they have the means. They could go out and buy a new striker in January. They could
absolutely
buy a Rodri replacement. They probably will.
I never have any sympathy or empathy when it comes to Manchester City.
No, definitely not. No. They have an easy way of addressing crises.
Yeah, for sure. Just get the checkbook out if they still do checks. I'm not sure. In these games that have started 39 minutes ago, Club Brugge and Aston Villa still 0-0. Shakhtar Donetsk, Young Boys, 1-1. Big game for Arsenal tonight, John. But the fact that they have Odegaard, I'm not sure if he's going to play, but at least he's kind of back travelling anyway, or back in with the squad, is such a positive one.
Yeah, you talk about Man City hitting the buffers, things at Arsenal got a bit ropey already, and then, you know, Edu leaving as well. Strange move, it seems to be, certainly from the outside.
Yeah,
going to Nottingham Forest. I don't know if that's confirmed, but that seems to be
strange one.
Yeah, so, Arsenal suffering at this stage of the season would be concerning, because they tend to do their slip ups later in the season. But big game for them at Inter. They still have a lot of qualities. We have a manager who knows what they're doing, but they have to come out of the sticky patch, still in the mix. You know, they could easily be out of the league title race before Christmas the way they're going.
Right. They do have a bit of work to do, that's for sure. John, thank you so much for all of that. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be keeping an eye on these early games as well, and if any team news comes in, we will bring it to you. We'll be chatting to Damien Lawler about all the Gaelic games news, including the Michael Murphy
is backstory.
Game on. GAA.
Now we're going to turn our attention to Gaelic Games. Damien Lawler is with us as he is every Wednesday. Damien, it's supposed to be a quiet time, but then today we're hit with a bit of news that is capturing a lot of attention. Michael Murphy is going to return to the Donegal senior football team, aged 35. It feels like a bit of a shock, but maybe to people in the know, it's not. What do you reckon?
Yeah, look, I mean, Marie, I won't lie to you. It's been in the public domain for a couple of weeks. He hung up the boots at 2022, missed 2023, 2024. Jim is back. I say Jim put enormous pressure on his former general to come back and join them last year. I wonder what's changed. Would it be the new rules? Could that be something? Michael worked on them himself, by the way. He was part of Jim Gavin's football review committee, and maybe he's taking a look at stuff that he can identify. I was chatting to him in Croke Park like as recently as a few weeks ago, and as part of the FRC, and he's obviously very, very busy with Michael Murphy Sports and his positions as well. So, but if it's true and it's happening, Marie, it'll shake up the GAA world in a really good way. He's one of the best players of the modern era. Multiple All Stars, five Ulsters, an All Ireland winner as well, an absolute gentleman on and off the field, a crowd favourite no matter where you're from, I think, but an absolute icon of Donegal football. And to be fair, Donegal working a million miles away this year, Marie. They had an unbelievable innings under Jim this year gone by with the league and Ulster, and didn't do a whole lot wrong in the semi-final, so maybe Michael Murphy is just the extra edge or two that they're looking for. To come back after 2 years out then, or after a period out, would be fairy tale stuff. But there's no doubt in the man's class, Murray, and possibly then they have a training block agreed, or maybe Murph has seen something in the rules that that he could really, really pin his collars in. But up to a few years ago, that man could do most anything on the football field. Sure, not much has changed based on his evidence with Glenn Swilly in the Donegal Championship.
Yeah, well, he's good at kicking the long-range points anyway, that's for sure. But you probably nailed it there. When you think of the minds that are in Donegal football, and we know that Jim does think outside the box, and he's been trained to think outside the box now through his soccer coaching as well, that maybe he has an idea for a role for him that can play. Because we've said it when we were talking the last time, Damien, that the coaches are going to be really busy now trying to devise ways to maximise these new rules and use them as much to their benefit as possible.
Absolutely. And like under the old system, when Michael was playing with Donegal first time around, remember Sean Patton's long kick out? Michael would raise in the middle of the field. He would look to break the ball to an on-running Ryan McHugh, and Ryan McHugh would bear forward and most of the time would cause havoc, including one or two famous goals along the way. This time around, the kick has to go beyond the 20, sorry, has to go past the 40. It can be taken quickly. Three versus three up top at all times. That he could be a complete focal point for the attack up there. And as you say, the two point arc, 40 meter going around, he'd be well capable of doing that as well. So there's a couple of things that straight away, and maybe a presence in the squad, and maybe a presence at certain points of the game to calm things down. But yeah, you're right. It's just fascinating to see how the coaches will get around this and how Jim will get around it. Yeah. I was up in Omagh last Saturday night, Marie, and Bo Canavans were looked after pretty well by St. Eunan's, but Dara still found a way by pushing over to the left sideline. And for a player like Dara Canavan, you're wondering why is he moving over here the whole time. But he started from a central position, moved over to the left sideline. The team started their build up from left cornerback all the way up the left wing. He took the fullback with him out of the game, and you could tell what was happening. At the very last minute then, he broke across the pitch back into the centre. Two or three, rapid hand passes off the shoulder in the meantime. It either released him or his brother onto goal. And even though the opposition knew it was coming, it's still impossible to defend at the pace that Dara was executing it. And also then, it left room for Ben McDonald on the far side of the field to pop up a two-match winning scores effectively. So again, you'd only be fascinated to see if Michael Murphy came back and what sort of a role could be found for him, Marie.
Yeah, definitely. He has to offer something anyway, or he'd know himself that it's not for him. But are we going to see a reverse of the trend of it being a young man's game? Because we actually don't say it as much as maybe we have in the past. And Paul Conroy at, is he 36 now, winning the Player of the Year? And now Michael Murphy coming back. Who knows what year he's going to have now? We know there's been a couple of retirements in Dublin, but still there's a few lads who are in the mid-30s and still playing huge roles.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I mean, You could say the same about managers as well, Marie, in the last season. Like, I mean, definitely for the last few years before that, a lot of younger coaches, the younger managers would be putting their names forward and, you know, maybe being able to devote the time. But you can just see with those with young families are finding it really hard to commit because it's not 40 hours a week anymore. It's possibly double that. Mm-hmm. And if you look around, then there's a talk of maybe retired people coming back in and having a little bit more time to devote to it. So could you say the same about playing the game? I certainly haven't seen anything physicality-wise to rule out players of a certain vintage over the last couple of seasons. You know, certainly with the stagnant nature of the game and the amount of time the ball is slowed down and then, you know, put across the field, I would imagine it's more the commitments, more than the 9 months of absolute immense sacrifice that probably people in their mid-30s who might have families themselves probably can't commit to anymore. So, yeah, look, split season could give people things to think about. From what I've seen, if you're going well with your county, it does just add to the load for the club player who's going to have a really successful club campaign as well. But yeah, Paul Conroy has definitely deserved his award. Age and injury have been no barrier to that man. Michael Murphy coming back, it just goes to show you too how much people have put their identities into this game. Like, I mean, for the likes of Michael, I mean, he'd be recognised all around Ireland and indeed part of Irish America. Just been an unbelievable footballer, and you know, he's a businessman and he's a family man and he's a TV media analyst as well. But maybe Michael might have felt that maybe he just gave it up maybe a little bit too early. But again, I interviewed Tony Griffin during the week, Marie, and Tony retired 2 or 3 years too early in my opinion. But it's easy for me to say that, but when I interviewed him this time around, he agreed with that too, you know. And some people know exactly when the time is right, and then others maybe a couple of years down the line have reservations or second thoughts about it. But Michael Murphy is coming back. I can't imagine it'll be anything less than 100% if he does come back.
Yeah, it's exciting, definitely, to see how it all pans out. Let's move on to the club championship because we're in the thick of it. Good news for Con O'Callaghan of Coolah. He will not have to get the train from Dock. He can now go on the team bus. He has been cleared to play in their Leinster championship game.
Yeah, there's a train. Can you say chartered, Marie? That's the word, but there's a train coming down anyway.
It depends how often you use it, you know. It depends how much is in your vocabulary.
Depends on what carriage you're in. But the good news for Coolah is it's no great surprise, is it, that Con is going to be clear to play. I think every effort is going to be made to appeal that decision, and I think video evidence is brought in to look at a decision in the Dublin County final whereby there was an altercation between, you know, an alleged altercation between Con and the Kimberley Crooks goalkeeper. Con received his marching orders and Coolah successfully appealed that the other night. And you know what, the game on Saturday night that we're televising will be all the better for Con O'Callaghan involved. And you know what, for the likes of Nace, if they are going to win, you'd rather beat Coolah with their full strength team if they are going to do that. But it's going to be a massive test for both sides. Coolah are out of Dublin. It's new territory for them. Nace have been there before, but they've always found it hard. Well, they haven't broke down Kilmacud Croke, so will this latest Dublin opposition be any easier for them? It certainly won't be with Con included, and you've got Patrick O'Byrne there as well, and, you know, obviously just cast in both teams. So that's going to be a really good game. That's under lights, and we've got that on RT2 on Saturday night from 7 o'clock as well, Marie, which I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be a brilliant one. And look, who knows as well now what's going to happen with the Leinster Football Championship, but it's always been really competitive anyway from a club perspective, and lots of people interested in that game on Saturday night. Back to the intercounty scene now. A couple of names from Cork have decided to either retire or opt out of the panel for 2025.
Yeah, Stephen Sherlock is the latest player to withdraw his services, Marie, ahead of the new season. He was an all-star. Stephen was an all-star nominee in 2022. And he was probably the top scorer, I'd say, for John Cleary in John's time as manager. But Sam Finbar's man, he's taken a year out. And I suppose his departure comes on the back of John O'Rourke, Killian O'Hanlon and Kevin Flahev. Kevin's moving to Australia, but the retirements of John O'Rourke then and Killian O'Hanlon, they're big losses too. And Damien Gore has also decided to take a year out from the intercounty scene. This comes back to what you were saying a few minutes ago about maybe elder players still involved. I think now you're seeing players maybe in their mid-20s to late-20s definitely considering taking a year out or a gap year. And you can understand why. Like, they've been in development squads from the age of 14. They've probably been hammering tongues with their clubs, with their schools, with their colleges, with their divisions in Cork. and obviously various underage county sides. And I mean, you looking at Stephen Sherlock, he's a serious innings built up underage as well. John O'Rourke as well, what a stalwart he's been. It's disappointing for Cork because they've made real progress over the last year and a half, and there's no doubting that, and I think they're starting to become a force again. And definitely Kevin Walsh and John Cleary have worked really, really hard to get their structures right and their channels, defensive channels right, and it is a blow to Cork, there's no doubt about it. However, there is enough talent in the county to replace that. How quickly they do so is the question, Marie, but certainly look at it, that's four or five big name players that you probably need in your squad going forward if you are to get back on top down in Munster before you look any further.
Yeah, and I guess when you have Kerry always there as well, you know, it can be difficult to keep having the hunger to go back. But look, the gap will have to close at some stage as well. So no doubt, though, a year out will definitely benefit. And just finally, do we have some National League fixtures, Damien?
Yeah, they're currently in circulation with County Board officials, Marie, for perusal. Now, for perusal, they're draft fixtures, but I think they're pretty much on the way to being decided. And I suppose the headline news is you're going to see Armagh play Galway in a repeat of the All-Ireland Final. That's going to be the first game out. So that's a really, really interesting one. Another one to watch out for them, Marie, is Galway are, you know, they've just, I suppose, they're about to unveil a €1 million floodlight development in Pearce Stadium. So that's going to be really, really interesting. You're going to see Saturday night games down there potentially under lights, and you know, beside the sea on a cold February. You see where I'm going with this one, Marie, don't you?
Yeah. I think you'll be on your own there now.
I think so. That is freezing in Salt Hill under lights on a Saturday night is usually bad enough. I went to college up there, Marie, so it tests you the best of times. Yeah. But look, Armagh Galway is going to be a great one. The Galway hurlers are out then against Tipperary a day later, I think in Thurles. So the point I'm making here is, you know, we're only a stone's throw away from the Allianz League really starting again. You have no pre-season this time around, so it's going to swing straight into operation, potentially hurling football. They are starting on the same weekend this time around. And five or six weeks of that, Marie, and you're back into the provincial championship straight away. And a few weeks of that, and then the real business of the season starts. So it only feels like yesterday that we bid farewell to the 2024 championship, but we're well underway in terms of venues, fixtures, players coming and going. That's probably still a small bit of that. And then most managers appointed by now. I won't say all, but most.
Yeah, geez, we're well into November now, so they'd want to get a move on. Damien Lawler, thank you for all of that, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Game on.
GAA.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Andy Farrell has named his team to play against New Zealand on Friday night in that big clash in the Aviva Stadium. We're going to be going through it with Keen Tracy, and also we're going to speak to Elliot Smith, rugby commentator with News Talk ZB in just a minute. But first, let's hear from Ireland head coach Andy Farrell, who spoke to Michael Corcoran today.
Andy, you've named the team to play New Zealand. A number of players who are back, but one player who isn't there is Tadhg Furlong. What's the story with him?
He's a tweak of a hamstring. It's something that he's had for a week or two, and he'd been rehabbing it. Obviously, he didn't play in his last game for Leinster there, and we thought it would have shifted quicker than it has. It hasn't, so we take our time with it and make sure we get him right further down the track.
You've spent some time in Portugal prepping for this match. Has that given you a chance to sort of be in your bubble group, if you understand what I mean, in terms of getting your preparation right?
It has, and it's important. We've done it on a number of occasions now. It works for us just to get out of the way, really, and just concentrate on ourselves. When lads are in camp together without any distractions, you can use a short period of time that we've got, and that's the cards that you dealt with, isn't it? International rugby. You probably have four or five sessions to get up to speed for what's going to be an awesome game, so you've got to use your time wisely.
Are you concerned that some of the players haven't had an awful lot of game time or sort of, you know, game mileage in their legs ahead of this game?
I'm not concerned. It is what it is. what can we do about it? We prepare as best we can and expect the same as ourselves, like we always do. There's no excuses.
You will have concentrated on Ireland, on yourselves, basically, ahead of this game. I mean, it certainly concentrates the mind, doesn't it, with a team like New Zealand to take you on first up?
Well, it does, and obviously we've played them quite a bit. Nothing changes, does it? They're still an outstanding side, classy side that's going to be hard to beat. And, you know, there's always a bit of drama, isn't there? When Ireland play New Zealand, we expect more of the same. There's no doubt about that.
They arrive here at the Aviva Stadium, haven't played two matches. England at the weekend, Japan the week before, so they will have that game mileage in their legs.
Yeah, and plus they've been together for 6 months. You know, they're like a club side, aren't they, in the Southern Hemisphere. Their season starts completely different to ours. Ours tends to be a little stop-start over the autumn and Six Nations and the summer tours, etc., and they tend to have a big, long block. So they're coming at the end of a long enough season for them, a bit of continuity and been together like a club side, like I say. But you've got to start somewhere within a season, and there's no better way to start the international season off than a Friday night game against the All Blacks here at the Aviva.
Without wishing to drag up the past, I mean, the last encounter with them started badly and finished badly. What's got to be different if you're going to beat them here on Friday?
Well, that's the nature of the quality of the two sides. There's nothing in it. I mean, if you look at all the top sides in the world now, and you can debate who's in that group, but certainly New Zealand are, and hopefully we're in the mix as well. It goes down to the wire. You look at the games that New Zealand's had this year, which they've lost. They've lost by a point or so, like, you know, and it just goes to show that the world-class side that they are, and we can see nothing but them being at their best. So we've a job to do to come up to scratch first up.
And just a final question about Friday night, 8:10, two teams in a big old arm wrestle, and people looking to kind of get actively involved in this match as well from a spectator's point of view.
Well, Friday night lights and all that, and you know, I suppose it's hopefully it's the place to be. Hopefully everyone's as excited as we are to get here, and we've played under the lights against them here before, and the atmosphere was absolutely outstanding. We expected to be more of the same. We've got to bring our side of the bargain to the party to make sure that everyone has a good evening.
That was Andy Farrell speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier today. Keane Tracy is with me in studio, and Elliot Smith is going to chat to us from Newstalk ZB. He's a rugby commentator in New Zealand. Just Keane, first a word on the squad. Ronan Kelleher pass fit. Tadhg Furlong misses out. How big a loss is Furlong?
Oh, it's massive, Marie. I mean, to put it lightly, Ireland have had issues in the scrum and against New Zealand, actually, in the World Cup quarterfinal last year. So it's a massive loss for Tadhg Furlong. It's a huge opportunity for Finlay Beelam to come in. Obviously, Tom O'Toole comes onto the bench. Ireland have actually been looking at Tom O'Toole, I understand it, as a potential loosehead, but he's obviously covering Tighthead this weekend. So a huge loss. I mean, Tadhg Furlong, apart from the scrummaging ability, how important he is in Ireland's open field attack, he's also a key part of the leadership group as well. You think that Dan Sheehan is already missing through injury, so you're down two of your first choice starting front row. So not ideal, but as you heard there, Andy Farrell, I mean, he does tend to roll with the punches, and I don't think they'll use that as an excuse. I think otherwise it was a long expected lines, but certainly Furlong is a big loss.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm delighted to say now that we're joined by Elliot Smith. Elliot, we're so excited when New Zealand come to town. Friday Night Lights is going to add an extra layer to it as well. How do you feel about coming to Ireland to play us on a Friday night in the Aviva Stadium?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I think the anticipation's high after that World Cup quarterfinal of last year. I know from it's been put to the side. Not from a New Zealand perspective, I can assure you of that. But I think these matchups over the last 10 years or thereabouts, since that first win in Chicago in 2016, have become absolute box office in world rugby. And there are very few matchups like it that go this way and that, and that you don't know really how it's going to go. And look, the All Blacks aren't the team, they aren't the force in world rugby that they once were, but they're still a very, very good team, as Andy Farrell pointed out in that chat with Michael before. And Ireland have usurped them, and they've taken over that mantle of being the leading force in rugby. So for the All Blacks, for so long have been that leading force. Now the challenge is to raise the bar and meet the challenge that Ireland has set before them. And these matchups between these two sides you know, not only the World Cup quarterfinal last year, but the matches in Wellington a couple of years prior and Dunedin and every other match that's gone on between these two sides. Very, very tight margins, and they've delivered exceptional matches.
You're setting it up so nicely for us now, for Elliot, that's for sure. You mentioned that New Zealand aren't the force maybe that they have been in the past. What do you put down this period of, is it inconsistency, transition? What do you put it down to?
There's a lot of factors, I think, and it goes back almost 6-7 years potentially, when things just began slowing down in terms of their success during the Steve Hansen reign. COVID played a big role, I think, around it, not playing some of those key nations, played Australia quite a lot in that two-year period. There was a lot of tours around there as well. So I think from an All Blacks perspective, there's a number of reasons behind it. Plus, they lost some generational players. You know, Dan Carter, Richie McCaw go back a decade now, but you know, Kieran Reid, Ben Smith, some of these names that Aaron Smith now as well, that have been fixtures in the All Blacks team list for any number of seasons. So they had this golden period, and trying to replace and trying to replicate it is always going to be very, very difficult from an All Blacks perspective. So growing pains are natural. They've got a new coaching staff this year as well, which has changed things around as well. So I think there's any number of reasons behind it, but certainly they've gone back to the pack in terms of where world rugby sits at the moment.
We were talking earlier about football fans being very impatient. How are the New Zealand fans about this period of transition?
Well, I think there's been a year of grace in terms of Scott Robertson coming into the role off the back of a World Cup where, again, you know, Aaron Smith is retired, Richie Moonga no longer available for selection. He's playing in Japan, a few other departures overseas and with retirements as well. So there's a bit of leeway given to All Blacks coaches in their first year. And this stretch of matches, England, Ireland, France in consecutive weeks, on foreign soil. And last week at Twickenham, tough place to play. Here in Dublin, Paris next week. That's a really tough ask. But I think from an All Blacks perspective, if there are losses this year, fans will accept it to an extent, but it's how the team's playing. Can you see the positive signs? Can you see them building 2025 and beyond? Can you see the structure there of the way they want to play? And I think to an extent, the jury is a little bit out as to what the game plan is for the All Blacks. We're seeing more signs of that, certainly probably in the last few test matches than maybe we saw at the start of the year as Scott Robertson firms up some of his selections as well. But I think this year, wee bit of a free pass for Scott Robertson, but the acid will certainly come on season 2025 for him.
Keen, we've seen New Zealand play quite a lot of rugby over the last while, whereas Ireland haven't been in that same position. Are they going in a little bit undercooked against maybe a battle hard in New Zealand?
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it that way, Marie, but then you could also flip it on its head and say that Ireland will be the fresher team, really. It's interesting, you know, Alan Walters has gone in there as strength and conditioning coach. He was a major coup for Andy Farrell to get him back from the English Union. So he's been working with them, I mean, one of the best in the business. So I wouldn't think that they'll use that as an excuse at all, to be honest.
What about you guys, Elliot? Do you think that all the rugby that you've played in the last while will stand to you, or does that bring with it the injuries and the wear and tear?
Yeah, look, we're playing in November now, and the Super Rugby season started back in February for a lot of these players, who are certainly at the pointy end of the season, and heading up north is always a tough test. But you can see, I think, the All Blacks beginning to grow, beginning to find out a little bit more about themselves, getting that confidence, certainly compared to where they were with the starting test of the year against England, when they came in and had 10 days preparation from assembling and introducing the new coaches, shaking hands to playing a test match. It wasn't a very long window at all to where the All Blacks are now. And you know, Scott Robertson has become a little bit more comfortable about what he wants out of his team. Wallace Satiti, only debuted in the third test of the year. Now you can't leave him out of that All Blacks run on 15. Other players as well, Cortez Ratama at halfback has become a fixture in the team. Will Jordan at fullback wasn't there earlier on in the year. So it's been a slow progress if you look at it across the 11 matches to date that the All Blacks have played. But the pieces are beginning to get there of the way that the All Blacks want to play. And, I think you look at it and go, yep, they've grown from game one to where we sit at the moment. And I think there's a real sense that this week and next week and last week we'll get a real barometer, a real gauge of where this All Blacks team sits from their first year under Scott Robertson.
Keen, will we get a similar gauge from this Ireland team where they're at now, do you think?
Well, you look at the profile that Andy Farrell has picked, Marie, it's not exactly a team for the future. I mean, he's gone back to Ian Henderson, he's gone back to Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray is on the bench, rather than guys like, you know, Ryan Baird, who is certainly, I think, disappointed to miss out Craig Casey. He had a really strong tour before he got injured in South Africa. So I think that gives you a little insight into Andy Farrell's mind and how, look, not that he was not taking it seriously, but Ireland want to win this game desperately at the weekend. There's no sense of experimentation or anything. It's the tried and trusted 15. Look, I think we got a good barometer of where Ireland sit over the summer. Winning that test down in Durban was absolutely huge, but kind of like Elliot has outlined there, the rivalry has been simmering really nicely. Like, I was over in New Zealand for that tour in 22, and whatever about beating the All Blacks in Chicago in a once-off game, but going down to New Zealand and winning a series in their own backyard has really poked the bear, so it couldn't be set up any better.
Okay, it does sound like it's going to be an absolute cracker. Elliot, thank you so much for all of that. Keane, thank you very much for coming in as well. We'll be continuing our build up tomorrow. Bernard Jackman is live in studio, so do tune in for that. Keith Tracy also in as well, and Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America for us. That should be interesting for sure. Just a couple of updates on the Champions League. Aston Villa have fallen behind against Club Brugge. It's 1-0 there. They have just scored a penalty, and Shakhtar Donetsk leading Young Boys by 2-1. 2-1.